Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of my opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgann. You can also send messages to the show on Twitter, at GoForItGann. And while you're there on Twitter, please give me a follow at GoForItGann. That is GoForItGann. Follow me there. You won't be disappointed. You'll enjoy some of the things I have to say. Big show lined up for you today. Expected to be joined by 49ers corner Terrell Brown, and we're going to talk to Terrell about the upcoming NFL season. Also, we're going to be joined by boxer Devin Alexander as he prepares for his big fight September 8th. Not sure of the location, but against Randall. It will be against Randall Bailey, and it will be for Bailey's IBF welterweight title. And also, we're going to be joined by St. Peter's College assistant coach Marlon Guild, and we're going to bring him in as he breaks down the latest NBA draft and talk about some of the winners, some of the losers, some of the steals, and give his thoughts, ideas, opinions, and beliefs on some of the draft picks that were made on Thursday night. And let's start and stay with the NBA draft on Thursday night. Big night for a lot of people, for a lot of boys who in a lot of ways have now become men. Lives have changed. People are cashing lottery tickets as we speak. Davis, Anthony Davis, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, to name a few guys who are cashing checks. Bradley Beal, Austin Rivers already has a nice little check. He has his daddy's check, but to name a few guys whose lives have changed overnight. And you look back on the draft, and one thing that sticks out was the lack of activity, the lack of trades. Wasn't a lot of activity in this year's draft, and that was a bummer. It's always a great thing about the NBA draft is the trades and the exciting part about the trades and seeing who's getting moved here, there, and everywhere. But you look at it, initially, your thoughts, and you have to say, and talk about the New Orleans Hornets, they have made themselves better. Have they made themselves a playoff team better? I can't say that. I can't say that at all because, you're in the Western Conference, and the Western Conference has a lot of great teams who can do a lot of great things. And so it's not going to be easy to get into the playoffs in the Western Conference. So has New Orleans made themselves a better ball club? Yes. Are they a playoff team? It's hard to say. Let's look at the standings this year in the Western Conference, and you look at the teams that didn't make it. Houston, 34-32. Phoenix, 33-33. Well, you look at it that way, and on second thought, now I'm looking at it, and initially my initial thought was maybe they don't, but looking at it again, Utah's a team that's better. The eight teams that made the playoffs this year are better than the Hornets and probably are better than the Hornets right now. So, yes, I do stick by what I said. Yes, the Hornets are improved. Yes, there's hope in New Orleans. Yes, there's a possibility that you have a superstar in the making in Anthony Davis. Yes, you have Austin Rivers, a guy that a lot of people are very high on, a guy who is the son of Doc Rivers, so he is a player. His dad is a coach, so he's grown up in that atmosphere, in the NBA environment. He knows the NBA world. In some respect, he knows the NBA life. So, looking at it, New Orleans, there's hope. There's definitely hope in New Orleans. You couldn't say that at one, you could say there was some talent there, but you could say now there's really hope with adding now Austin Rivers to the mix, adding Anthony Davis, obviously, to the mix to go along Eric Gordon. Hopefully they can re-sign Eric Gordon, bring him back, because there's talent there, obviously. So there is something there with that roster, especially if you can throw out a roster with Eric Gordon, Austin Rivers, and Anthony Davis. It's an improvement. I'm not saying it's a playoff team, because I still don't think they're a playoff team at this point, but it truly is an improvement. It is an upgrade. They have upgraded their ball club. Are they a playoff team? The answer is no. And you wonder what Anthony Davis will be on the next level. I mean, a lot of people said that there's a lot more than he's shown at Kentucky. There's a lot more ability, a lot more things that he can do. Obviously, his offensive game at this point is a little raw. The offensive game is raw, so you're not going to expect him to come on in right away and put up a bunch of points, put up a bunch of numbers on the offensive end. But I think what you're going to get from him, and I think that the immediate dividend that he pays is on the defensive end. I mean, on the defensive end, he's going to be able to block shots. That's what he did. And I think he will continue to do that on the next level, and that is the NBA level. I think he will continue to do that. You will get a guy who can run the floor. You will get a guy who has athletic. You will get a guy who can ultimately come on in and block shots for you. Defensively is where he's going to be big in his first year. The key for Anthony Davis, and all reports are, all indicators are, that he is a good kid. He's willing to put the work in. But the key is, what is he going to do for his the offensive game, the offensive side? What kind of improvements will he make there? Will he get a dependable elbow jump shot? Will he do some work in the post, help him on his post game, develop some post moves, maybe a jump hook or something in the post? So what will happen with Anthony Davis on the next level? What will he be on the next level? You're hearing all the various comparisons, KG, Tim Duncan. You're hearing those type of comparisons. I actually heard this from Marlon Gill, who will be joining us later in the show, but I was looking on his Facebook page, actually, and something stuck out to me. He compared Anthony Davis to Marcus Camby, and I found that to be very, very interesting. And you remember Camby coming out of college. Camby could do it all. Camby had the ability to do it all. Get up and down the floor. Block shots. Just the ultimate athlete. The do-it-all type of big man. Marcus Camby is an underrated passer as well. So Marcus Camby had a lot of ability. And a lot of comparisons were made about Marcus Camby. A lot of people were very high on Marcus Camby coming out of UMass. And a lot of people saw franchise type of center. Now, Marcus Camby's had a very good career throughout, and has done some things in his career. I mean, you remember the years with the Knicks where he was a big reason that the Knicks got to the finals back in 99. Marcus Camby has had some decent years. Now, Marcus Camby is not a franchise center, power forward, so on and so forth. He wasn't that guy. But he was very good. He was good. Now you're hearing comparisons to KG, like I said. I'm more inclined to go with the Marcus Camby comparison. Marcus Camby, a great shot blocker. Marcus Camby, a great athlete. Marcus Camby, get up and down the court. Marcus Camby, a decent jump shot. Decent jump shot. Not a great jump shot. Had a funny looking shot, but it was a decent jump shot. I'm not opposed to that Marcus Camby comparison when talking about Anthony Davis. I'm not opposed to that comparison at all. I'm not opposed to that comparison at all. We'll see. We shall see what happens to Anthony Davis on the next level. But the NBA draft has come. Has gone. But there's a lot of various stories that's going to play out this summer in the NBA. One is KG is looking like all reports are that KG is staying in Boston. So at this point, you keep two-thirds of the big three, KG and Pierce. Ray Allen is still up in the air. And the thing about Ray Allen, there are reports that there's mutual interest with Ray Allen and the Miami Heat. There are reports there. And I heard Stephen A. Smith say this week, if Ray Allen goes to Miami, you can book him for two championships. I'm not ready to go that far. But what I will say is, you add Ray Allen to LeBron, Bosh, and Wade. You add him to that situation, a guy who is a lot more dependable than Mike Miller in terms of shooting the basketball, in terms of everything, really. I mean, you're talking about a bona fide Hall of Famer. If he's healthy, you're talking still 15-point-a-game score. So, if you add Ray Allen to the Miami Heat, that's big. That is big. And to me, in adding Ray Allen to the Miami Heat, you weaken the Boston Celtics. So you weaken a competitor. Even if Ray Allen is not Ray Allen, you still weaken the Boston Celtics. The Boston Celtics are weakened or a lesser team without Ray Allen. So if you lose Ray Allen, if you're the Boston Celtics, that hurts. But if you gain Ray Allen and you're the Miami Heat, my. What a wonderful day would it be in Miami. To add Ray Allen to that championship team, to that team with all that firepower, all that talent, the big three, to add Ray Allen to that, you're talking about a team that I'm not saying, I'm not going to go Stephen A. Smith and say guaranteed two chips, but I will say this is a team that may get at least one. They will get at least one. I'm not saying two, but they will probably get at least one. I mean, and I talked about this last week, but you look at the Eastern Conference, you have Boston there, but if they don't bring back Ray Allen, that's going to hurt them. That's going to hurt that team. They're still going to be formidable. And they're still going to be a team you have to look out for. But if you're bringing Ray Allen over to the Miami Heat become a whole different beast at that point. So it may not even matter what you do if you're the Boston Celtics. The Miami Heat become something different now. They become something different now. So it may not even matter what happens in Boston. It may not even matter what happens in Chicago or any other Eastern Conference city. If Ray Allen goes to Miami, look out. Look out. Adding him to what's already there, Jeez. I mean, and I'm a Sixers fan, and so, you know, obviously, I can't, in terms of winning championships, in terms of talking about my team, meaning the Philadelphia 76ers, as a championship contender, I really can't do that. But I will say this, if Ray Allen goes to Miami, I really can't even talk about it even a little bit. I mean, granted, the Sixers got to almost were a game away from the conference finals. But my. If Ray Allen goes to Miami, it's not going to be happy times for anybody. Anybody. It's not going to be happy times for anybody. But I am happy, in talking about KG, Kevin Garnett, I am happy that all reports are he will be returning to Boston. I'm glad he's going to continue to play. And he's a guy that still has game left. He still has game. And the Celtics in this draft, they added two big guys, Fab Melo out of Syracuse, and also Jared Sullinger, a guy that was red flagged by NBA doctors because of his back. But, I mean, you add him to the Boston Celtics, and some people are talking Big Baby type, and Big Baby was very successful with Boston coming off the bench and gave them a lot of depth during that championship run. So if you add a Jared Sullinger to what you already have in Boston and put him under Kevin Garnett's wing, I mean, I think it's a good pick for Boston, especially where they got him. I definitely think it's a good pick for them. And who knows? I mean, a lot of people, you hear it all the time, to talk about, I mean, you got DeJuan Blair, others talk about his ACL and everything, and he so far has had no problems with that issue. So Sullinger, as he goes on to the next level, may not have those problems with the back. But, I mean, putting him under Kevin Garnett's wing is going to be very helpful for his career. He's got to be happy, excited, and in some respect, dancing in the streets to be going to the Boston Celtics and have the opportunity to learn under the great Kevin Garnett. Have that opportunity. So that's in some respect, if you're Jared Sullinger, it's a blessing in disguise what happened to you. Because now you fall into a good situation. Instead of going to a bad team, you go to a situation with a team that was in the conference finals and took the Miami Heat to seven games and was up 3-2 against the Miami Heat and had the sixth game at home. So this is a team that was very close to getting to the NBA Finals. This team was very close to getting to the NBA Finals. But I think the key for the Boston Celtics is they have to bring that core back. They have to bring that big three back and big four. You can throw Ray Allen out and call the Boston Celtics big three with Rondo, Garnett, and Pierce. I mean, however you want to call it, or big four with Rondo, Ray Allen, Pierce, and Garnett. However you want to say it, however you want to slice it. But the thing about it is, the Boston Celtics, I think, have, if they want to continue and continue to be a contender in this league, in the Eastern Conference, and a championship contender, period, they're going to have Ray Allen in the mix. Ray Allen has to be in the mix if they want to continue the good things in Boston. Ray Allen has to be in the mix. And we'll see if he is. We shall see if he is. The Heat are going to make a run at him. The question becomes, if you're Ray Allen, do you want to go to Miami? I mean, obviously, in terms of who does, if Ray Allen is, if his motive at this point, everybody's motive, obviously, every player wants to win a championship for the most part. I mean, some want to go for money as well. But, I mean, if you're Ray Allen and you say you want to win a championship, and you have an option to go to Boston or to Miami, in terms of winning a championship, your best option, your best chance is in Miami. If you want to win a championship, your best chance to win a championship is in Miami. That's it. I mean, yes, you can go to Boston, and yes, you will be competing. You will be competing for a championship. You will have an opportunity. But I will say this, if he really wants to win a championship, bottom line, his best bet is the Miami Heat. And so if he goes to Miami, you can't argue with him. You can't say it's an upgrade. It truly is an upgrade for him. Miami is a better team, was a better team, and is a better team than the Boston Celtics, and probably will continue to be a better team going into the next year. So Ray Allen has a decision to make. He has a big decision to make. And I'm interested to see what his decision will be. Is it Boston, or does he go to South Beach, sunny Miami, and join the world champion Miami Heat. Could you imagine the type of easy shots Ray Allen would get, the open looks that he will get in Miami? Could you imagine? Perish the thought. And looking at it now, you know, other free agents out there, another big fish, and one of the probably the biggest fish is Deron Williams. Where does he go? All reports are, Dirk Nowitzki came out and says 50-50, Dallas and Miami. Dallas is his hometown. Not Dallas and Miami, Dallas and New Jersey. Brooklyn, I should say now. Dallas is his hometown. Dallas is his hometown. So, does he stay, or does he go back, I should say, to Dallas, to his hometown, or does he stay with the Nets, Brooklyn, new arena in Brooklyn? You're in New York, obviously, the media market, media capital of the world. So, you're in New York. You are in New York. The thing about it is, you're not winning probably anytime soon in Brooklyn. You're not winning in Brooklyn anytime soon. So, your best bet, if you want to win now, if winning now is what you're looking for, then you, my friend Deron Williams, need to go to Dallas and go to your hometown. If having the opportunity to play in New York City, the endorsement opportunities that New York City has to offer, the opportunity, I mean, if you win in New York, it's Brooklyn, but it's still New York. If you win in New York, they'll love you for life. So the opportunity is there for Deron Williams in New York City, more specifically Brooklyn. If you go there, if you're Deron Williams, like I said, you're not winning this year. You're probably not winning next year. But it depends. It depends. I don't think you're winning this year. I don't think you're winning next year. But who knows? Dwight Howard is out there. And he wants to come. A lot of talk last year that he wanted to come to Brooklyn, come to the Nets, and join Deron Williams. Maybe that happens. You add Dwight Howard to the mix. And Dwight Howard, where he goes, whether he stays in Orlando, whether he goes to the Brooklyn Nets or goes out west to the Lakers, wherever he goes, it's going to change the course of the NBA season. So whether that is, whether he stays in Orlando, whether or not he goes to the Nets in Brooklyn, you add Deron Williams and Dwight Howard together, and I'm not saying you're there in terms of they're throwing in the heat, but I say you're okay. I say you're close. I say you're getting there. So you add him, Dwight Howard, Deron Williams, you put them together in Brooklyn, you're getting there. You're not there completely in terms of winning the championship, but you're getting there. But it does make the Nets a formidable team. It depends on what they do in terms of other parts of the roster. Who knows what can happen? But where Dwight Howard goes is going to be big. That should really, really help us determine whether or not which teams out of the East are going to be contenders, or even out West for that matter. Oklahoma City is sitting there, and granted this year they can still keep this thing together with Ibaka, Harden, Durant, Westbrook. But the thing about it with OKC, they got a decision to make as well. Reports were they were looking to trade James Harden. Because the thing about it is, with the luxury tax and some of the various rules that are out there, they have to determine whether or not who they want to keep. Do you keep a James Harden? Do you keep a Dwight Howard? You have a decision to make in that respect. Not Dwight Howard. Do you keep James Harden or a Serge Ibaka? And the decision, in a lot of ways, is easy to me. I think you got to go with Ibaka. I mean, James Harden, we'll see how great of a player he truly is outside of Durant and Westbrook, because I think OKC, if they're going to have to make a choice, and if the choice is between Ibaka and Harden, they really truly have to go with Ibaka because of some of the things that he can do. The ability to get up and down the court. The ability to block shots. His athleticism. I mean, he's young. He's new to the game. He's learning. He's evolving as a player. And the sky's the limit for that guy. The sky is the limit for that guy. We'll see. The reality is, with the luxury tax and the stiffer penalties with the luxury tax, OKC, being a small market, is not going to be able to afford to pay everybody. They can't pay everybody. They can't afford being there in a small market to pay everybody. So they have to make a decision, a determination, and decide who is more valuable to our situation. Who is more valuable, Harden or Ibaka? Who is more valuable? And that's a decision they're truly going to have to make. May not be this year, but they're definitely going to have to make it next year. They're definitely going to have to make it next year. But the big fish in this year's free agency is Deron Williams. You can't forget about Steve Nash, where he will go. Toronto's in the mix. He is Canadian. But Steve Nash did say he wants to win a championship, and he did indicate that Toronto was a long time away from winning a title, and that they are. So it might take them out of the mix. The Knicks, Steve Nash did indicate that he wants his money. So the Knicks may be out of the mix. So it should be interesting where Steve Nash goes. And that is going to change the balance of power, I believe, where he goes. Will he go back to the Suns? Does he stay in Phoenix? I don't know how much that helps him at this stage of his career. It's still a team that's not championship ready. They're not championship ready in Phoenix. So Phoenix might be out of the picture. If I had to choose where Steve Nash is going to go, I get the sense, and with Deron Williams, where Steve Nash goes, you have to look at Deron Williams first. I think Deron Williams is going to end up staying in Brooklyn. I know he had a birthday dinner, and Avery Johnson was there. I know also the Nets sent him a birthday card outside of his home in New York City. So you look at that. And I believe the Nets the other day had a press conference, and Deron Williams kind of poked his head out. So I get the sense, and it's 50-50 according to Dirk Nowitzki, but I get the sense that Deron Williams is going to end up staying in Brooklyn. So with that being said, and I get the sense the Nets are going to try to do everything they can to get their hands on Dwight Howard. It might be hard with some of the assets that they have, but with that being said, if I'm predicting this thing, I think Steve Nash goes to the Dallas Mavericks and returns to Dallas with his buddy Dirk Nowitzki. I think Steve Nash goes back to Dallas. That's where I see Nash going, back to Dallas. So we'll see. But I think the first order of business is what happens with Deron Williams. Where does he go? Does he go or stay in Brooklyn? Or does he go back to the crib and goes back to Dallas with the Dallas Mavericks. Should be interesting to see. But it's right around the corner, July 1. July 1. That's right around the corner, folks. And this whole thing gets started then. This whole thing gets started then. The frenzy, if you will. July 1. This whole thing gets started. And that's tomorrow, folks. Let the spending begin. Let the courting. Let the all of the people showing up at individuals' doors 12:01 on Sunday. Let it all begin, folks. Because free agency in the NBA is upon us, and always an exciting time. Always an exciting time. The NBA draft into free agency is always an exciting time. And a lot of people, I mean, the draft wasn't as exciting because of the lack of trades, lack of activity, but it still was entertaining. Not as exciting, but still fairly entertaining. Looking forward to what's going to happen in these next few days. When we come back, we're going to be joined by 49ers corner Terrell Brown. He will be joining us very shortly. You're listening to Go For It on blogtalkradio.com.
Almeida, a.k.a. Corey Live, host of Pixarica on the Hub and warm-up host for American Idol and Dancing with the Stars. And right now, you are listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio with my man, Pauly G and Jeremy. Get it!
Thank you, Corey Live.
You got it, brother. Have a go, man.
Thank you, Corey Live. And in a moment, we're going to bring in a guy who's about to get it in his upcoming 2012 season. He has some big-time goals, and he believes that he can achieve them, and we're going to talk to him about it. Let's bring in now cornerback for the San Francisco 49ers, the great Terrell Brown. Terrell, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And Terrell, last year was a breakout year for you. First-time starter, career-high 4 interceptions. What made you so effective in 2011?
I think just the system. I think me just going out there, being myself, the coaching staff believing in me, and just letting me go out there using my athletic ability. I think anytime you got athletes that can make plays, you want to fine-tune their game and then just let them do the rest. So I think that's I give most of my success to that.
And you look at last year, you look at you guys, and Jim Harbaugh came in, and he brought a different energy to your ball club. He seems like a fun guy to play for. Talk about playing for Jim Harbaugh.
It's just good to play for a guy like that. I think anytime you have a coach that's played the game, that knows the ins and outs of the game, and that's a player's coach, it's a positive. Being around him on a consistent basis, he brings the best out of us every day, and he expects us to compete every day as well. So I think just being around him in the meeting rooms and being around him on a weekly basis, it brings the best out of all the guys around.
And Terrell, looking at you guys last year, you were very close to getting to the Super Bowl, real close. And looking at it, you had an opportunity for a game-changing interception. You collided with Deshaun Goldston. That was a big play of that particular ball game. Do you still relive that play in your mind?
Yeah, I do. But, you know, the thing about last year, it was last year. You know, we have to forget about that. We had a great season last year, and we achieved a lot of our goals. But this year is a new season, and, you know, when we start the season off, we're 0-0. So the first thing we have to do is, you know, stay consistent, keep working hard, and go out there and take it one game at a time.
We're talking to 49ers cornerback Terrell Brown. And, Terrell, I got a couple dollars laying around here, and you promised and almost guaranteed that you will make the Pro Bowl. If you don't,
yeah.
You say you're donating a week's pay to charity. I got a couple dollars laying around. should I bet that? Should I bet it?
Yeah, I think you should bet on me. I mean, it's a win-win situation for me. You know, I put out there on Twitter, you know, if I don't make the Pro Bowl or lead the league in interceptions, I would donate one game check to one of the three of my foundations. So I think it's a win-win situation. You know, it's pressure is only pressure when you're not prepared. So I prepared myself throughout the year, throughout the off season, and this time right here to get myself ready for the upcoming season. And I believe in myself. So at the end of the day, you know, I'm putting my money where my mouth is.
And so I got these couple dollars laying around. I think I might use it on you. You sound very convincing.
How much you got for us?
$20. I got $20.
All right, well, look, money is money. We take it all.
And looking at it, you got some big-time goals coming into the season. We talked about the Pro Bowl, but another goal of yours was to lead the league in interceptions. Talk about that.
I think anytime you're professional and you play at a high level, you always want to compete with other DBs or other guys at your position. So for me, you know, I feel like, you know, that's something I can achieve. And just to go and work for that every day and stay consistent with going out, trying to be the best player I can be every day. It can't do anything but hurt you. So it just brings a level of competition throughout the game that's already within the game.
And looking at it now, you had your mini camps of a few weeks back. All reports were you were looking sharp. You look good there. Talk about what you did in this offseason to stay sharp.
I think just, you know, minicamp OTAs is just about knocking the rust off. I mean, you know, you don't you go out there to compete and go out there to make plays, but you're knocking the rust off, working on the things that you feel like are your weaknesses and just fine-tuning your game in general. So for me, you know, I was going out just trying to fine-tune my game, working on all my weaknesses and trying to make my weaknesses my strengths.
And looking at it now, a guy that you brought in during the offseason, the 49ers brought in Randy Moss, first year back after retiring. How did Moss look during those mini camps?
He looked amazing, to be honest with you. He looked like he hasn't lost a step. He looks like the same Moss of old, you know, can stretch the field, makes acrobatic catches, get in and out of his breaks very well. And he's a great team guy, you know, just being around this guy for few months that I've had the opportunity to be around him, you know, you can tell that he brings a presence that a lot of guys don't have. And just getting an opportunity for all of us to practice against and play on a team with a Hall of Famer, man, is special. So we look forward to it. I think we're making each other better on and off the field, and we're competing. So that's the good thing about it.
We're talking to 49ers cornerback Terrell Brown. Terrell, you're looking at your ball club now. In this offseason, you brought back Alex Smith. You added Randy Moss, Mario Manningham, Brandon Jacobs, to name a few. Talent-wise, in your opinion, is this team better than that 13-win team in 2011?
I don't know yet, just because we haven't played a down yet. You know, we look good on paper, but paper's paper. You know, a lot of
right.
teams look great on paper, but any given Sunday, you know, you give your team a chance to win. So for us, man, like I said, you know, it's all about X's and O's. I think if we stay consistent and keep working hard on getting better within the details of the defense and offense, we'll have a great season coming up.
And looking at it now, I mean, you guys, we talked about Alex Smith. You brought him back in. Around the league, there have been questions about him, but I get the sense you guys really believe in Alex Smith. Talk about that.
Yeah, we really do. I think a guy like that, you know, being comfortable within the system he's in, he's very comfortable, he's very confident in what he's doing. I think anytime you have a guy with his second year into a system like that, it can't do anything but help him as well. He's a leader. He's a guy that we depend on day in and day out, and he does a great job for the offense getting him in and out of play. So I know those guys are very explosive. They'll do a great job on that side of the ball, and, you know, look for big things from that offense coming up this upcoming year.
And Terrell, you're a guy who obviously got it done on the field last year, and you're getting it done off the field. You did some things last week with your fifth annual Sports Fest, which benefits Brown Kids Foundation. Talk about that Sports Fest last weekend. How great was it? Good times?
Man, we had a great time. It was a Terrell Brown charity event. You know, we do every year. Like you said, it's our fifth year. So we came out. We had an event at Celebration Station, raised some money for the kids. Kids came out, go-kart riding and laser tag and bumper boats and batting cages and video games. So then we came back Saturday and did a free football and cheerleading camp, and we had over 300-some kids. So it's always a great turnout just to come back to my city, my community, and just give back a little bit. You know, I appreciate them so much for the support throughout the years, the ups, the downs, and throughout high school as well. So, you know, just to give my little bit back, you know, for my city, you know, it's a small thing, but, you know, it's a big thing in their eyes. So for me, you know, I've always loved to do that, and I've always loved to help out in any way possible.
And you got the Browns Kids Foundation. You also got your foundation, Born Again, and I'm pretty impressed with this one, which helps ex-offenders. What is the motivation behind that foundation?
To be honest with you, Born Again started my first year in the league. Got it started up my second year, really. But I thought of the idea of my first year in the league, and it pretty much was just to give convicted felons a second chance. You know, a lot of times we're one step or one mistake away from, you know, a change of our life forever. So, you know, just giving them another opportunity to say, you know, we know you made a mistake, but at the end of the day, you know, it's just a mistake, and you can also redeem yourself from that mistake. So I've always thought about doing that. You know, I have a couple of family members and friends who are in the same situation. So
right. That
was one of my biggest things that I wanted to give back to them.
And looking at that, I mean, being African-American myself, there's a lot of things out there, a lot of African-Americans who unfortunately are getting incarcerated and are not getting that second chance. And I think this one makes this whole thing very big. I mean, you're giving people an opportunity to have a second chance at it. I mean, and there's a lot of people with a lot of ability that are in prison and need that opportunity, and I really applaud you for this one.
Well, I really appreciate it.
And Terrell, where can we find information about your foundations and all the great things you're doing in the community?
Go to check out TerrellBrown.net, T-A-R-E-L-L, last name Brown.net. You'll be able to find out all that information as well.
And I know you're on Twitter. What's that Twitter name?
Check me out on Twitter, Real, RealTB25, at Twitter. And, yeah, that's it.
Fans, support some of the great things this guy has going on in the community. He's got a big year planned for us. He's talking Pro Bowl. He's talking leading the league in interceptions. I got a couple dollars, and I think I'm going to invest. I'm going to make that investment. I believe after talking to you, I heard the comments, but after talking to you personally myself, I think I see it. I see it.
Well, I need that $20 donated to one of my charities. So how about that?
No problem. I'm gonna put my $20 on Terrell Brown. I believe in Terrell Brown, and big things for you this year. Big things.
And I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks for joining us, and let's do it again.
All right, sound good.
Terrell Brown, corner for the San Francisco 49ers. Again, he's got he's promised us, he's told us that, you know, he's going to make the Pro Bowl, and he's betting a game check on it. He's putting his money where his mouth is, you know. And so you got to respect that. He had a big game yet last year for the 49ers. I mean, in that play that we referenced in the interview with Deshaun Goldston, where he bumped into, where they knocked into each other, and he was knocked out of that game. That was a big play. That could have been a game changer. 49ers get that interception there, and that turned that whole particular game around. I thought the 49ers really dominated that game. I thought they didn't dominate, is the wrong word, but I thought they were in great position to win that game, and I think that was a game that they should have won. They let that one slip away. They let it slip away. And so, I mean, it happens. It happens. They let it slip away. But the thing about it is, now, you know, this is a new year. Like I said, I talked about some of the talent they brought in. That defense is tough. Patrick Willis, Terrell Brown, Goldston, that front force, the Smith brothers, Alden and Justin. That's a tough, tough defense there. So you know with that defense, they're going to be formidable. The question is, and the key is Alex Smith. They put more weapons around him this year. Last year, you could argue in terms of the wideout position, it wasn't effective. I mean, you have Vernon Davis at the tight end position, but in terms of on the outside with you had Ted Ginn Jr. there, you had Crabtree, but you really didn't have that game changer. Randy Moss, if he's looking sharp and if he is as advertised, if he's the Randy Moss, he may not be the Randy Moss of old, but if you can get some of that, you have an upgrade. Mario Manningham, I think, also is an upgrade as well. So the 49ers have improved, adding a Brandon Jacobs. And like Terrell Brown said, it is only on paper, but adding Brandon Jacobs there, that is an improvement. That is an upgrade. That is an upgrade. So it should be interesting to see what happens with the 49ers in 2012. Are they a better team on paper? Probably. But it is just paper. And on paper doesn't win you championships. And you can ask the Philadelphia Eagles just that. In terms of, you look at the Eagles and what they put on paper, they were immediately called a dream team. And we all know what happened to the Philadelphia Eagles. 8-8, out of the playoffs. So you look at it now. You look at the San Francisco 49ers. I think they are better on paper. But the one thing about it, the NFL, and it's a year-to-year league, and the same teams that make the playoffs one year don't make it the next. So, you know now, I think the Eagles will be better. The Cardinals could even be better. I'm just I said the Eagles in the East, but out West, the Cardinals could be a better team. Seattle could step up and become a better team. And even the Rams, for that matter. I mean, last year was a big-time struggle for them. But again, you can never you look at one year to the next and it's totally a different thing. I mean, the team that won the Super Bowl this year, the New York Giants, didn't even make the playoffs a year ago. So, and granted, the Giants, and I said that 2 years ago, the Giants were the best team to not make the playoffs. They won 10 games 2 seasons ago. But you look at the Giants, one year they don't make the playoffs, the next year they go from the fifth seed to the Super Bowl. So, anything is possible in this league. The Bengals, a team that really stunk a year ago, gets into the playoffs. The New York Jets, a team that we expected to contend, many expected to win the Super Bowl. I know Willie Rowe picked them to go to the Super Bowl. The New York Jets, they don't make the playoffs. Dream Team Eagles, a team that we expected to get to the Super Bowl. A team that was in the playoffs 2 years ago didn't make the playoffs last year. The point I'm trying to make is there are no guarantees in this league. There are no guarantees in this league. You can make the playoffs one year. You could be sitting home the next. That is, and that's the beauty of the NFL in a lot of ways. That's the beauty of the NFL. But you look at it, and just talking about the 49ers, yes, on paper they're a different team, seemingly a better team, but the thing about it is injuries changes things. Look at the Chicago Bears. I mean, last year they probably would have made the playoffs if Jay Cutler doesn't go down. They missed. He goes down. Caleb Haney comes in. He stinks up the joint. Chicago Bears are out of playoffs. The Atlanta Falcons are a team. They made the playoffs last year, and a team that's going to be there with some of the acquisitions they made in the offseason. So you're looking at these things, and Arizona could be a better team, like I said. So the thing about it is, yes, on paper the 49ers are better, but like I said before, you can make the playoffs 1 year, you can miss it the next. The Giants, heck, like I said, they made the Super Bowl last year, missed the playoffs the year before. So it's so funny, it's so tricky, and there's no guarantees, but we shall see what happens in the upcoming NFL season. And as always, it should be an exciting NFL season. And speaking of the upcoming NFL season, there's a guy out there that believes in, that he will be a part of the upcoming NFL season. Which team, he doesn't know, and that is former Eagle, former Redskin, and now former Viking quarterback Donovan McNabb. Donovan McNabb said this week that he does want to play and believes that there's an 80 to 90% chance that he will play in 2012. He said he has three teams on his list. The question becomes, of those three teams, do any of those three teams want him? There's three teams on his list, but do the three teams on that list really want him? In some respect, it's almost like, okay, there's three girls that I want, three pretty girls that I want. But it'd be irrelevant if they don't want me. It'd be totally, absolutely irrelevant if they don't want me. So you can want an eye, three teams and three girls or whatever else you want to put it, three pieces of food or three whatever. You can eye these things, but will these things eye you back? And that's the thing with Donovan McNabb. He really has not shown any of us these past couple years that he is and still has game. He really has not shown us that he really is an NFL starting quarterback in this league. It wasn't good for him in Washington. It wasn't good for him in Minnesota. And it could be a lot of factors. I mean, a lot of factors. I'm not saying he had a lot of weapons in Minnesota. I will say he had a running game. But other than that, I'm not saying he had a lot of weapons, because he didn't. He didn't have a lot of weapons in Minnesota. Washington, the same thing. But the thing about it, if you're and he didn't say training camp, you know, in terms of if something happens in training camp with a team, maybe injury or team's not happy with their quarterback situation after camp or during camp or during after a couple preseason games, he did say that would be his opportunity. And so also looking at it, I mean, he says the three teams that he added or has eyes on have a running game, have weapons on the outside, wide receivers, and also their defense has been playing well. These are his quotes. His defense has been playing well and playing well together, and that's ready to win right now. So I guess the three teams that he mentioned, A, have receivers on the outside, B, have a running game, and C, has a defense and is a team that's ready to win right now. Now, I hear that, and then I immediately look at the teams around the league. Who could be those three teams that may not be happy with their quarterback situation come training camp, who has a solid running game, and who has receivers on the outside, and has a defense that has been together and played well over a period of time? Just looking around the league, I would have to say San Francisco kind of jumps out at me. I mean, Moss adding a Manningham on the outside and a defense that's been played well together over time, and a team that's ready to win now, and a team with a solid running game with Frank Gore. I would say San Francisco. I would even look at the New York Jets. I know Tebow's there, but I mean, a team that seemingly had a decent running game, has some weapons on the outside in San Antonio Holmes. has a defense that's played well and has played well together over a period of time, I would look at them as well. And obviously, this is all speculation and just looking at this, but he named three teams, and I'm trying to name put these three teams together in my head. And I'm coming up with San Francisco. I'm coming up with the Jets. And another team, not Detroit, probably not Dallas. I don't know. That third team is a mystery to me, and I'm going to go out on a limb and guess here. But possibly, could it be the Raiders? I mean, the defense is okay there, but they have a running game. The weapons on the outside are really, they have some weapons on the outside, but it's not, you know, it's not something big time. I'm looking at it, and I'm going to narrow it down to this. I'm going to say the 49ers is one. I'm going to say the Jets are two, and this is no particular order. And I'm going to guess here with this third one, and I'm going to say the Chicago Bears. And granted, they don't have a lot on the outside, but they did bring in Brandon Marshall. They do have Matt Forte, and they do have a solid defense. But Jay Cutler is coming off injury, so you never know how healthy or what he will be. He's healthy, but you don't know. There are always questions when it comes to Jay Cutler from time to time. But that's my guess. I think the three teams, 49ers, the Jets, and this last one, I'm just going to say the Chicago Bears, but I could be really wrong there. I could be pretty wrong there. But I can't see. I think his route back to the NFL is going to be, like I said, I said it numerous times, it's going to be the Kurt Warner route. And that is go somewhere, be a backup. Go somewhere and be a backup, possibly. And maybe injury kind of puts you in. Maybe injury puts you in to a particular ball game and puts you in position to take over the job. Maybe. But that's really the only situation, that's the only way I should say that he is going to get an opportunity to play in this league again. Really? You're listening to Go For It on Block Talk Radio. Back, and again, Donovan McNabb, again, he's saying to us, he's telling us that 80-90% chance he will be playing again. He has three teams on that he's eyeing. At this point, we don't know if they're eyeing him. So at this point, Donovan's in a club right now, and this is just it's all analogies here, but I'm comparing it to a guy being in a club, scanning a room, and saying, you know what? These are the three girls that I want. Nice body, beautiful face, well put together, nice dress, so on and so forth. Those are the three girls I want. And the thing about it is, he may be eyeing them. He may be looking at them. But all of those three girls looking at him. And so, yes, he can eye all he wants. He can eye all he wants. But the thing about it, and the key point, the biggest point I think of it all, are they eyeing him back? Judging what he did in Minnesota, judging by what he did in Washington, I truly, truly doubt it. I truly, truly doubt it. And the funny thing is, and talking about Donovan McNabb now, and continuing to talk about Donovan McNabb, I should say. Funny thing about it, the other day, I was watching the 2009 Washington Redskins yearbook, done each and every year by NFL Films for all 32 teams. And I was watching the 2009 yearbook, and at the end of the yearbook, obviously you watch those yearbooks, you think your team is going to win the Super Bowl, going to get close to win the Super Bowl, and, you know, everything is sunny and everything is beautiful, and there's no such thing as rain, snow, sleet, or any bad things. But you look at it, 2009, at the end of the yearbook, they were talking about, and this is 2009 going into the 2010 season, they were talking about the acquisition of Donovan McNabb and how things were on the up and up for the Washington Redskins. They added Donovan McNabb, a six-time Pro Bowler, five times to the NFC title game, and it was almost like the Redskins finally got their franchise quarterback. Little did they know, the franchise quarterback that they thought they had was shot. Was and is shot. And you know how I feel about Donovan McNabb. If you ever listen to the show, you know how I feel about Donovan McNabb. You know how I feel about this guy. To prove it to you, I wrote a little song about the man before he was traded to the Washington Redskins.
Say McNabb, everybody. Say McNabb, everybody. He is the guy. If the Eagles want to fly, everybody say McNabb.
So
say McNabb.
You know how I feel about him. The song proves and shows how I feel about the guy. But as they like to say in the streets from time to time, you got to keep things 100. You got to keep it real, as they like to say in the streets from time to time. I love Donovan. He's given me much pleasure over his years in Philadelphia. Those five NFC title games, four of them were sad, but the one that he got us to the Super Bowl was great. One out of five was great, was enjoyable. The other four was a little disheartening, but the shake move that he put on Mark Carrier his second year in the league, I enjoyed that. The long pass to T.O. against the Dallas Cowboys on Monday night where he ran around, and finally passed the ball to T.O., I enjoyed that. I mean, the moments of playing on a broken ankle, I enjoyed that. Getting us to the Super Bowl against the New England Patriots in 2004, I enjoyed that. And so there's love, obviously, for Donovan McNabb when it comes to Paul Gannon talking about him. There's a lot of love here. I got love for the guy. But I got to keep it real here. I don't think he has anything left. I think he could be a backup in this league, but I don't think he's a starting caliber quarterback in this league. Oh, he says he's gotten himself in great shape. Oh, he says he has a lot to prove, and he wants to prove people wrong and prove that he still has a lot of game left. But these last 2 years has told me all I needed to know about Donovan McNabb. I love the guy. I want nothing but success for the guy. But I just don't think he has anything left. I don't think he has anything left as a starting caliber quarterback in the National Football League. I don't see it. I could be wrong. I may be wrong, but I doubt it. But I will say this, and I'll put this discussion to bed right now. I will say this. I'm rooting for him. I hope that he does get another chance. I hope he can be successful if given that other, given another opportunity. I hope he can. But I would be very, 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 and I'll have to say very one more time, surprised if he will be successful in the NFL again. Be very shocked, actually. And I don't believe he's going to play this year. He says he will. 80-90% chance he says he will play. I don't see it. But he may know something that I don't know. He may have talked to people that I haven't talked to. I don't know. But I will say this. The last 2 years have told me, I think, all I needed to know and need to know at this point. He will not be on the NFL roster in 2012. And you could, I could say book that, but, I mean, that's really not saying much. I mean, I think anybody can say that. I think I could put my two-year-old daughter in front of a television screen, put on some film of Donovan McNabb over these past 2 years, and I think she would tell me, Dada, Dada, he can't play no more. No, Dada, no. No, Dada, no. He can't play no more. No, Dada. I think my two-year-old daughter could see that. But we shall see. At the end of the day, I'm rooting for Donovan McNabb. And I'm rooting for the guy, and I'm rooting for him hard. I'm rooting for him hard. So we shall see what happens with Donovan McNabb in 2012. But he did tell me, he did tell you guys, he told everybody, 80-90% chance, 80-90% chance that he will be playing in 2012, and he has three teams that he's looking at. Will those three teams be looking back at him? We shall see. Moving on and looking around the National Football League right now, Matt Forte of the Chicago Bears. And looking at Matt Forte, you look at some of the things that's going on with him. I mean, obviously, he deserves a long-term contract. Obviously, he has been pretty much the only weapon on that Chicago Bears roster last year. On the offensive side of the ball, he did a lot of things for the Bears, running the football, catching the football. I mean, he deserves a long-term deal. He has earned the opportunity to give him a long-term deal. And looking at it, I mean, he has not signed his franchise tender, but if he would, he would be making $7.4 million this year if he does decide to sign it. But him and the Bears, they have until July 16 to get this done, but he wants a long-term deal. He wants a long-term deal. And he believes that the Bears have disrespected him over last season. He felt like the Bears disrespected him in not getting him that deal, that long-term deal that he desires, that he believes he's earned, that he deserves. He does deserve it. He was, and when he went down, the Bears really missed him at the end of that season. That was another reason the Bears didn't make the playoffs. I mean, obviously, Jay Cutler's injury, but Matt Forte being down also hurt that ball club. Hurt him immensely. Hurt that team immensely. Him being down hurt that team immensely. So, no Matt Forte, no Jay Cutler meant the Bears stayed home last season. You want Matt Forte to be happy. You want a guy who's probably your best offensive player to be happy. If you're the Bears, you got to take care of him. Well, you don't have to do anything. I mean, pretty much you can give him a franchise deal and have him sign it and move from there. But if you want him to be happy, you have to pay the man. You have to pay him. You have to pay him. And I hope he gets paid. I mean, you want to see everybody. And when I see NFL players, I mean, DeSean Jackson a year ago, I mean, guys want to get paid. And the thing thing about the NFL, you only have so much time to make so much money. You really, anytime you have an opportunity to maximize your income, you got to do it. You got to do it. You have to do it. You have to take advantage of that opportunity. You have to. And so, Matt Forte wants to get paid. Matt Forte believes he deserves to get paid. The question becomes, will Matt Forte get paid? That will be the big question as we move into the 2012 NFL season. Another question that we have to answer as we look around the NFL is this whole situation with the Saints bounty scandal. That has to get answered as the guys have appealed. The players have appealed. They had their hearing. Everybody had their hearing except for Jonathan Vilma. Vilma walked out, actually. He felt like his lawyer, and they didn't really feel, they felt like they didn't have the time. Didn't have the time to really, really defend themselves against the evidence that was against these guys, Anthony Hargrove, against Scott Fujita, against Will Smith, and against Jonathan Vilma. Obviously, if you're these guys, you want those suspensions reduced, and out of everybody, more so Jonathan Vilma, because he's missing a year's worth of salary. And the thing about it, and I talked about it maybe a few weeks back, and I'll say this again, Chris Carter brought this up, and I think it's a great, great point. Sean Payton, Mickey Loomis, those boys can be GMs and coaches for a very long time. They can be coaches for a very long time. Jonathan Vilma, he can't play the game forever. You only have that window, that short window to play this game. You can't play this game forever. You can coach for a very long time. You can coach darn near forever. I mean, look at Joe Paterno at Penn State. Very nice college, but he coached till in his 80s. So you can coach for a very long time. Well into your 60s, 70s, you can coach for a long period of time, but you can't play football for a long period of time. You mean, for the most part, unless you're Brett Favre-like, you're not going past 40. You're not going past 40. And so, Jonathan Vilma, he really does have to fight for what he feels is right. He has to fight. I mean, the evidence does the evidence is really against them. The evidence is really against them. Really stacked against them. But the thing about it is, and I say the evidence is stacked against them, but it's, and I say that, and I'm looking at history, not necessarily the evidence against these guys, because the evidence, in some respect, it does seem a little flimsy. But in terms of Roger Goodell, the guy who levied the suspensions against these guys, he's the guy who's going to hear their appeal. He's going to hear the appeal. So it's like, okay, what has changed? What will make Roger Goodell change his mind? What will make him change his mind? It's like if my son or daughter came to me and I said, you know, you're punished for 2 weeks, and they come to me, same person now, they go to a different person. Maybe they appeal the punishment to their mother, and their mother will say, you know what, 1 week for it. But if I made the decision of 2 weeks, and 2 weeks later, or let's say a day later, you come back to me, you say, you know what, they start pleading with me and start saying, I think the penalty should be 1 week. Why would I really change my mind? I don't think I really would change my mind. Now, if you appealed it to another person, and that would be my wife, maybe she would say, you know what, 1 week is good. No, 2 weeks is over the top here. 1 week is good enough. So the thing about it is, and the point I'm trying to make is, their appeal is going to Roger Goodell. It's all going to Roger Goodell. It's not going to anybody else but Roger Goodell. It's all going to Roger Goodell. He was the one who decided on these penalties, and now he's going to be the one who decides whether or not these penalties are fair. He's the one that hears the appeal, not someone else. And that's, hey, if you want to blame somebody here, blame the Players Association. They had an opportunity to take that power away from Roger Goodell, and the league really fought. The league really fought to keep that power in the hands. They really fought to keep that power in the hands of Roger Goodell, to give him that judge, jury, and executioner type power. They fought for that. But you look at it. You look at it. I don't know how anybody can say that's fair. It's been collectively bargained, so it's a done deal. But I don't know how anybody can say that is fair, that the man who gives you your penalty is the same man who is going to decide whether or not the penalty is fair. That's like me saying, making a decision and saying that my decision was stupid, my decision was wrong. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. It's like you making a decision to say, you know what, son, you're punished for 2 weeks. He comes back to you the next day and says, I think the punishment is unfair. You're probably not going to change your position. You're probably not going to change your position. Like I said, on the other hand, if he appeals the decision to his mother, his mother may say 1 week is good enough. So that's the thing here. So it's really backwards in a lot of ways. It's backwards. But hey, the Players Association, the players agreed to it. They're okay with it. If they like it, I love it. I don't really love it, but just have to deal with it. It is what it is. And speaking of it is what it is, Lamar Odom, last year for the Dallas Mavericks, I mean, he went through some things. He really did not want that trade to Dallas, but it happened. He wasn't his right mind last year. He was struggling with some things off the court, struggling leaving L.A. He was struggling with some things. And so, the Los Angeles Lakers, which I thought was a mistake, traded him to the Dallas Mavericks. And when that trade was made, when he was traded, I mean, obviously on paper, if you're the Mavericks, you're getting a 6'11 lefty who can do it all. Pass it, shoot it, play multiple positions. Very versatile player. Very versatile player. You had to be happy with bringing in adding a Lamar Odom. But it didn't work out for Dallas, and ultimately they sent him packing before the end of the season. They sent him packing. But he, in a lot of ways, Lamar Odom, you know, he struggled with some things off the field, off the court. I know there was an incident where his limousine driver hit somebody in New York City, killed somebody. It was obviously an accident, but that really hurt him. That really hurt him. And obviously moved away from Los Angeles. In some respects, it affects reality TV. It affects his wife, Chloe, as they had their little thing going on with the Kardashians and all that stuff. So leaving L.A. affected Lamar Odom in a lot of ways. It was not good. And I heard a lot of people talk about this and talk about Lamar Odom and talk about staying away from this guy. If he's not playing in L.A., you don't want to be bothered with him. And he has returned. He is returning to the L.A. Clippers in a four-team trade. He will be back where it started. It all started for him many years ago in L.A. You remember the Clippers. There was so much promise. They had Odom, Darius Miles, Corey Maggette, Keon Dooling. There was a lot of promise with that Clippers ball club many moons ago. It never, obviously, never really materialized into anything. The Clippers were the Clippers. They stayed the Clippers for a long period of time until, well, 2006 was a big year for the Clippers. But even then, I mean, after 2006, it kind of went downhill. And then last year, the Clippers got back to the playoffs and ultimately got to the second round of the playoffs. But you look at the Los Angeles Clippers now. It's a totally different animal, totally different beast with the Clippers. They're a contending team. Chris Paul, Blake Griffin. And now you add the versatility on Lamar Odom. You have Chauncey Billups. Hopefully they can get that done. You have him coming back. The Clippers now become very formidable. If Lamar Odom can regain that magic, and right now he is working out and trying to prepare for the upcoming Olympics. Hopefully, if you're Lamar Odom, he can get on the squad. He's looking to do that. But if you're the Los Angeles Clippers now, Chris Paul, Lamar Odom, Blake Griffin, and Chauncey Billups, if you can bring that up, put that all together, that's a formidable squad. And if Lamar Odom can be Lamar Odom that he was 2 years ago when he was the sixth man of the year, you're talking now with the Los Angeles Clippers and the versatility of Odom, you're talking now a team that's definitely going to scare somebody and scare some teams. They have really, really become a better team with this acquisition. The key is Lamar Odom has to get right. And I think being in L.A. is going to help him get right. That should help him get right. So if you have him, your chances of becoming that team, that formidable team, that team that can be a contender, that can play with the San Antonios, the OKCs, the Lakers of the world in the Western Conference, if Odom is right, you have that. You have that. This is a big move and a great move for the Los Angeles Clippers. This is a great move for the Clippers. A great move for them. Especially if he's right. A great move for them. And this puts them in good position now. In a great position to contend in the Western Conference. This puts them in position to contend in the Western Conference. If you're a Clippers fan, and I know Clipper Dell, guy's been on this show many times, I know he's excited. He's jumping around, dancing in the streets of Los Angeles, riding around his Clipper car. You know he's excited. The key is, you add him. I think if Billups is coming off an Achilles, but if he's right, bring him back a Chauncey Billups. Your situation now is much better. Your situation now is much better in Los Angeles. Big move by the Los Angeles Clippers. You're listening to Go For It on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to be joined by Devin Alexander. Devin just texted me. He has an issue at home, so he will not be able to come on today, but we're definitely going to reschedule that one, and we're definitely going to talk to him before his upcoming fight against Randall Bailey. Devin, a friend to the show, been on the show numerous times. Hope all is well with him, but he will be unable to join us today. And again, we're going to get him on another time, and he's got a big fight coming up against Randall Bailey for the IBF welterweight title. And so, and that would be big for him. I mean, an opportunity now to get a belt. You get a belt, you always have options in boxing. It's always good to have a belt in boxing. And so, Devin Alexander, he's looking to get that belt against Randall Bailey, and that fight will be on September 8th. At this point, no venue, so we don't know where it will be. But you look at it, it's a great opportunity for Devin Alexander, but he will not be joining us today. And again, we will look to schedule him right before, we're going to get him before that fight. So stick around. In the next few weeks, we will have Devin Alexander. I'm going to go back to basketball in the NBA now, and it looks like a prize free agent will be going back to where he started, where he was, I should say. And that is Scott Brooks, the coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder. At this point, reports are that the Thunder and Scott Brooks are close on a new deal. And if you're the Thunder, you want to keep the continuity. You want to keep what you have with Scottie Brooks, a guy that's been a big time coach for you, gotten you to the conference finals 2 years ago, and then to the NBA Finals this year. So you really want him in the fold. You want him in the fold. And so that's big for OKC. Kevin Durant, I know, is a big fan of him. So that's big for OKC to have him now back in the fold. Like I said, keep the continuity. Keep building on what you have in OKC, and Scott Brooks now will be, as reports are saying, will be back with OKC. They are close on a new deal that will keep him in Oklahoma City as the coach. And again, if you're OKC, you're that fan base, you're the players, you got to be happy with that. I mean, he's done a great job in Oklahoma City. And that team, you thought going into the playoffs, not the playoffs, I should say, but you thought going into the finals, and after that first game, you thought that there was a possibility, a very good possibility. I bet you a lot of people who had picked Miami, if they could switch their pick, probably would have switched their pick after what they saw in game one. You thought that Oklahoma City was on their way to winning that NBA final and becoming the 2012 NBA champions. You thought it, and I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. I think if I had an opportunity to change, well, and I had an opportunity, obviously, but I'm a man, try to be a man of my word, try to stick to what I say and stick to my guns in some respect. But, I mean, if I was going to change it, I may have done it after game one because it looked like Oklahoma City was just a better team. But, again, Miami turned things around. LeBron James stepped up. He was a superstar. He was clutch. He was big. He was the finals MVP. He was the man in the NBA Finals. He was absolutely the man in these NBA Finals, and ultimately adding Chris Bosh into the lineup, putting him in the lineup as the starter center was big for Miami, and it just really took off from there. They took off from there and dominated these NBA Finals and really, 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 really showed that they were the best team in 2012. But, hey, I know a lot of people out here, if they could switch their pick after game one, would have switched their pick. They would have switched their pick. A lot of people would have switched their pick, and I'm going to be man enough to be honest here, and I say I was one of them. I was one of them. But, again, Oklahoma City, Scotty Brooks, they're close on a new deal that will keep him as the coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder moving forward, and that's going to be big for OKC. And looking at the NBA now again, Jameer Nelson of the Orlando Magic, he has decided to test free agency. And I look at this from his standpoint, probably not a bad idea. I know he says at this point he would love to resign with Orlando and love to stay with the Magic. But considering the whole situation with Dwight Howard and the uncertainty with Dwight Howard, considering all that now, it's probably a good idea he opted out. It's probably in his best interest to opt out. This probably is a good move for Jameer Nelson, just to see what's out there. Just to see what's out there. And again, it could be a situation where he can put himself in a better situation. He has an opportunity to put himself in a better situation. And so, like I said, especially with the uncertainty of Dwight Howard, and who knows what he's going to do. He's under contract for this year, but after this year, you don't know what he's going to do. And then you get yourself in a situation where now you're in a rebuilding situation. You're on a bad team. And then it could be a situation now where the Magic trades you to a place that you don't want to go to. Right now, Jameer Nelson has the opportunity to say, you know what, this is what I want to do. You know what, I want to go to this place or that place. This is an opportunity now to get out of Orlando, get out of an uncertain situation. It looks like Dwight Howard probably will not resign with the Magic when it's all said and done. He may not even start the season in Orlando. Houston's going hard at him. You never know with the Nets. Dwight Howard would love to be in a major market, love to be in a big city so he can flash that smile and make a lot of money off the court. He would love to be in that situation. Would love it. Love it. Absolutely love it. And think about it. If you're Orlando, I'm getting a sense at this point, if I'm the Magic, and I know last year I said the Orlando Magic should try to keep Dwight Howard, see what can happen. But I think at this point, it's just you just have that elephant in the room right now. That's Dwight Howard. What is he going to do? And I think at this point, if you're Orlando, it might be time to see what you can get for a guy. See what kind of assets you can get. Rebuild this thing. Tear this thing down. Build it back up again. It might be time to do that if you're the Orlando Magic. Because Dwight Howard, you don't know what he's going to do, and it's so uncertain. It's like he's holding the franchise hostage. In a lot of ways, LeBron James did that with the Cleveland Cavaliers. But the big difference there is that the Cleveland Cavaliers were very, very close to being a championship team. They were there. I mean, they were a 60-win team 2 years in a row with LeBron James. So they were one of the better teams in the league. You throw Dwight Howard out there for the Orlando Magic right now, you can't say that is one of the better teams in the league. It's not. It's a fourth or fifth seed in the Eastern Conference. That's what it is. That's what it is. And with the uncertainty of Dwight Howard, it's going to be hard to bring in other players because other players are not going to want to be there if Dwight Howard's not there. If you're a veteran and you want to win, are you going to go to Orlando? not knowing what Dwight Howard's going to do? That would be foolish. That would be stupid. So, if I'm the Orlando Magic, I think I'm going to move Dwight Howard and try to see what I can get to rebuild this thing. I know Houston's trying to get some assets to get Dwight Howard. Brooklyn seems to be a favorable destination for Dwight Howard. The Lakers, you never know, in terms of an Andrew Bynum. And an Andrew Bynum would be an intriguing situation for Orlando if they would make that trade. And it's not even, I'm not saying it's been proposed, it's been rumored. I know there was talk about it last year, but if Bynum was there and he had an opportunity to get an Andrew Bynum for Dwight Howard, you have to think about it. But I think the Magic should go in a different direction. I think they should try to get as many assets, as many draft picks as possible to rebuild this thing, break this thing down, tear it down to pieces, and bring this thing back up with the draft picks, with the young players, and with the assets that you have. And who knows, with the assets that you do compile, and you look at the Boston Celtics, and they're a perfect example of this. They had the assets. They had the number five pick that year, the year they got the, and put the big three together. But they had the assets. And looking at what they had Al Jefferson at the time. They had the number five pick. And what they were able to do with some of the assets that they had compiled over the years, what they were able to do, those assets turned into Ray Allen and Kevin Garnett. And you added that to what you had with Paul Pierce and Rondo, and that turned into what we have with the Boston Celtics now, and a team that was a championship winner in 2008 and has been a championship contender ever since. And that all started because the Boston Celtics were able to compile and put together the necessary assets to be successful and to be able to make a deal like that. I mean, Boston went from a team that was a bad basketball team to an instant contender and ultimately a championship winner because they stockpiled their assets, draft picks, and young players, and they were able to turn it around into something meaningful, into Ray Allen, into Kevin Garnett, and ultimately into an NBA title. So we'll see, and I think that's what the Magic need to do. And even Oklahoma City, what they were able to do, Sam Presti, what they were able to do in terms of turning and getting a Kevin Durant and kind of rebuilding through the draft, getting a Kevin Durant. And you remember the year they traded Ray Allen, in 2007, they were a decent team. Meaning the Seattle Supersonics at the time. They were the Seattle Supersonics at the time. And they were a playoff team. But Sam Presti decided, you know what? In order for us to get better, we had to break this down. And so they decided to trade Ray Allen to Boston. And ultimately, in that year, they got Kevin Durant with the second pick. And they were also able to get Jeff Green. Jeff Green got them Kendrick Perkins. The following year, they got a Russell Westbrook. And so you see it all coming together for OKC. That is what the Magic need to do. The Magic need to do the same thing. It's time to get out under this whole Dwight Howard thing. Move him on to wherever he wants to go. It's time to rebuild this thing. Get better. Get the assets necessary to get better over time. As long as Dwight Howard is keeping you hostage and holding you hostage, you will continue to be what you are. You will be 4-5 at best this year in terms of seeding in the Eastern Conference. And you will run into you're possibly now, if you play out the season again with Dwight Howard, you're running into the possibility of getting essentially nothing for this guy. Move him while you have an opportunity to get assets. While you have that opportunity to get the assets necessary. Move him now. And I think it's time to move Dwight Howard. It's time for the Magic to move on. And again, if you're Jameer Nelson, you opted out, it's probably not a bad idea that you did that. Probably smart on your part. Probably very smart on your part if you're Jameer Nelson. So kudos to Jameer Nelson, my friend. You did the right thing opting out. Try to find a different situation because Dwight Howard ain't staying. And you don't want to be a part of a rebuilding situation. And you don't want to be traded to a place that you don't want to be traded to. So take advantage of your free agency. Take advantage of the opportunity to go elsewhere. Take advantage of it. Take advantage of it. Smart move on Jameer Nelson's part, I believe. And we'll see what happens in this offseason. We'll see what happens with the Orlando Magic. We'll see what happens. We'll see what they do. Do they finally move on from the elephant in the room? And that is Dwight Howard. Orlando, if you're listening, Rob Hennigan, new general manager of the Orlando Magic, if you're listening, it's time to move. It's time to move on from your situation. It's time to move on from Dwight Howard. Get the assets. Move on with your life. We're going to move back now to the NBA draft. We're going to talk about the NBA draft with a guy who knows a lot, probably scouted some of these players, may have even tried to recruit some of these players. Let's bring in now St. Peter's assistant coach, the one, the only, Marlon Gill. Marlon, how are you, sir?
What's up, Paul? How's everything, man?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
Nah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
And Marlon, I want to get right down to it, and I want to start at the top of the draft with the New Orleans Hornets and Anthony Davis. And I talked about this earlier. I was trolling around. I looked on your Facebook page, and the comparison that you made with Anthony Davis, and I haven't heard this comparison, but it made a lot of sense, was Marcus Camby. You're hearing Kevin Garnett. A lot of people are talking Kevin Garnett. Some people are saying Tim Duncan. But to me, the Marcus Camby comparison kind of made sense. Talk about that.
I just think they're very similar at what they can do. Blocking shots, running the floor, rebounding. People forget that Tim Duncan was a four-year college player that developed over time. And even when he got to Wake Forest, he wasn't skilled and didn't really know the game, but he understood at his size, hey, I belong on the block and I need to learn how to post up, score going over my right shoulder, score going over my left shoulder. And Kevin Garnett was just a different animal. You don't see that every 10, 20 years. I think the Camby thing was, a good comparison because they're so similar right now. You look at the things Marcus Camby was able to do at UMass, block shots, handle the ball a little bit in transition.
Very true.
I think that's where Anthony Davis fits in right now. And that's no knock on him. I don't want people to think that at all because Marcus Camby had a good career. I mean, he's been in the 13, 14 years, which ain't bad. So, that was my thought process behind giving that comparison. Anthony Davis still hasn't played a game in the NBA yet. But now, I'm sure he'll be fine and will, have a pretty long career. But to compare him to those two guys, I think it's unfair to him right now. People forget that he was only 6'3 before his senior year of high school. So, you know, whereas those two guys, Garnett and Tim Duncan, you know, were already over the 6'8 mark. So, now I think you give Anthony Davis time and see how things happen, see how things turn out. You know, going to New Orleans is great because they're not going to be expected to do anything, you know, at least for another 2 years. That gives him time to develop, you know, gives Austin Rivers time to develop, you know, and as long as they can keep Eric Gordon, I think you build around those three guys.
Right. And to your point, you talked about the growth spurt. In a lot of ways, he's learning how to play big right now. He's still learning how to play big.
Right, right. And you even look at, you know, the team that he played on this year at Kentucky. He really didn't have to do much. Yeah, they threw it to him in the post from time to time, but you still had, you know, Steve Gilchrist, who I'll be the first to admit this. I didn't think he would be this good. He's proved me wrong. But you still had him. You still had Terrence Jones. You still had Deron Lamb, who I think will be a great NBA player for Milwaukee. Marcus Teague. And then coming off the bench, you had Darius Miller. All guys that can score the ball. So, you know, you're not really asking Anthony Davis to score the ball yet. And if you watch him this year, yeah, they threw the ball into him from time to time, but a lot of his points came in transition, running the full offensive rebound.
And we'll see what happens with Anthony Davis, but I think what we're going to see this year from him is what you're going to get from him is mostly going to be on the defensive end, I think. And the offensive game obviously has to evolve, and hopefully it will. I mean, all indicators are he's a hard worker, he's a good kid, so we'll see what happens. But if he turns into a Marcus Camby, that's not really bad at all. And Marcus Camby, to your point, has had a very good career. And also you look at the Hornets, they also grabbed Austin Rivers, son of Doc Rivers, out of Duke at 10. There has been talk about his ego before this draft and some of the things about him. Looking at Austin Rivers now, I've heard the comparison to O.J. Mayo. Well, what are your thoughts on Austin Rivers?
He's more suited for the NBA game than he was for the college game. You know, the NBA is a league that thrives on pick-and-roll situations, and I think that's where he excels. In the college game, you know, we tend to slow it down a little bit, run sets, and, you know, try to move the ball before we decide on a shot. The NBA is more of a one-on-one league, and I think that's what he is. He's a great one-on-one player. And you know what? The biggest thing with him is he has the confidence in himself. And I think as long as you have that, that will take you over the top, you know, 9 times out of 10.
And looking at also another guy that we heard a lot of talk about, Bradley Beal, the comparison was to Ray Allen. A lot of people made that comparison. He will be joining John Wall in Washington. How do you see Bill?
10 years from now, Bradley Beal will be the best player out of this draft. I really believe that.
Wow. Better than Anthony Davis.
Better than Anthony Davis. Better than Kid Gilchrist. I think right now the only person that will probably match up to him, and it's still early, I think, is Deion Waiters. Those two guys, when it's said and done, I think will be, you know, the talks of this draft.
And let's get to Deion Waiters. A lot of talk about him. Many believe that he was taken a little too high at number 4 by the Cavs. Been some character issues with him early in his career at Syracuse. Talk about his shot selection, a little questionable. Obviously, you think this guy is going to be one of the better players in this draft moving forward when it's all said and done. Why are you so high on Deion Waiters?
You know, Deion Waiters is just a bully. I say that, you know, in the most respectful way. You know, he does whatever he wants to on the court. You know, he can drive to the basket when he wants to. Has a decent shot where you got to play up on him. If it's a smaller guy, you know, he has a good frame where he can try to post guys up. You know, he's just crafty. I know a lot of people talk about his character issues and things of that nature. You know, you also got to remember these guys are 18, 19 years old. who, you know, prior to now being in the NBA, they've been given everything hand to foot. You know, now they have to earn it and work hard, and that's something he doesn't have a problem with doing.
We're talking to St. Peter's assistant coach Marlon Guild, recapping the NFL draft. He knows a lot, not the NFL, NBA draft. He knows a lot about these players and probably has recruited some of these players. You recruited some of these players, or at least tried to?
Hey, you know what? I'll tell you a funny story. I recruited Mo Harkless for 2 years, man. And, you know, probably never had a shot with him, but to his credit, you know, he kind of, he returned all my phone calls, you know, from time to time would check in on me and see how things were going. But, you know, by his junior year of high school, man, you kind of knew that he was going to be a special player. And, you know, like you said, you kind of recruit some of these guys. And, you know, between him and Coach Andre Drummond a little bit, I'm happy for those two guys.
And looking at Mo Harkless now for a moment, I am a lifelong Sixers fan. You're pretty big. You're pretty high on this guy.
Yeah, I am. You know, going to St. John's for a year. You know what? I'll tell you a quick story. What made me realize that, you know, Mo Harkless had the it factor was prior to his senior year, I watched him. And, you know, coming from New York City, a lot of guys get a lot of hype. And, you know, early on, that was one of the reasons why I thought I'd finally have a chance to, you know, get Mo Harkless because, you know, you had the hype but didn't really have the Kobe factor. You know, you and I spoke about that before. He didn't have that it factor. And
right.
that summer before his senior year, everywhere that he played, he dominated. And it was one of those things where it looked like the light finally turned on for him. And, you know, he took that into his senior year of high school and even took it to St. John's. Granted, they were undermanned the entire year, but, you know, I didn't think the kid could play the four in the Big East, and he proved me wrong and, you know, did pretty well and ended up winning Big East Rookie of the Year. I'm sure he could have probably liked some more wins for his college career. But, you know, it didn't turn out too bad for him to go in the first round, you know, to the Sixers. You know, a pretty good team to go to and,
right.
And learn from the guys that they have there and get better.
Definitely. And looking at it now, Marlon, Jared Sullinger out of Ohio State, he went 21 to the Boston Celtics. NBA doctors red flagged him because of his back. Obviously, I mean, I think this is a great pick for the Celtics. I mean, a guy and a great pick for him and a great opportunity for him because now he can learn under Kevin Garnett. Reports are Kevin Garnett will sign with the Boston Celtics. So this is a great situation for him. But talk about the selection of Sullinger for the Celtics.
Before I go into that, I just want to say I breathed a sigh of relief earlier, man. Coming back. You know, I'm sure there are a lot of people out there this past week who were on pins and needles, nervous and wondering if he was going to come back. And, you know, I'm not a Celtics fan, but, you know, I thought it was just good for the NBA. You know, there's certain guys that you can't lose, you know.
Right.
Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, and I put Kevin Garnett in that same
wow.
category.
Wow.
You know, just for what he does to the league and what he brings. So I was definitely happy to hear that he wouldn't be retiring. 3 years, 34, $35 million. He deserves every penny of it. So whoever disagrees, something's wrong with them. What that guy's done, he deserves whatever he wants. Going to Sullinger, the Celtics couldn't have done a better job, you know, with both him
and Melo too.
And Chris Joseph, you know, you add those three guys. The verdict is still out on Melo, but you figure Sullinger is a guy who just works. You know, whatever you ask him to do, he's going to do it. And that's what veterans are looking for. And I think he'll fit in fine there. And people forget, you know, you look at what they have already. You had Juwan Johnson on that team last year, Etuan Moore as well. And Avery Bradley came along this year. These
right.
are all guys that have been proven at the collegiate level. So, you know they're low maintenance. They're just going to come in, put their hard hats on every day. I think that's where Sullen just fits in. Fab Melo, the same way, his potential is proof. I think being with that team, he'll have to buy in. You kind of don't have a choice. With the veterans they have, they lead by example. And it's just one of those things where, when you're a little kid and you try to see what you can get away with, but once your parents raise their voice, you kind of know, like, all right, I need to get in line. I think they'll be along that line, and Chris Joseph just works hard as well. So I thought overall for the Celtics it was a great draft.
And looking at Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, you talked about him earlier, a lot of people question whether or not the Bobcats should have took him at two. Maybe some felt the Bobcats should have traded out of that pick, so on and so forth. But what is the ceiling for Michael Kidd-Gilchrist? How good could he be on the NBA level?
He'll be real good. And the reason for that is he just plays hard. He has the pedigree of the old school guys at the NBA, where I'm just going to, for the 48 minutes that there is in the game, I'm going to give you everything I have. And if I stop breathing, it's going to be at the middle of this court. and you don't see that nowadays from guys. And like I said earlier, I'm skeptical of Mike Gilchrist. That's what everybody called him before he changed his name. I was very skeptical of him, watching him in high school. Didn't see what everybody else saw, which is rare. But, once he got to Kentucky, you saw how valuable he was to that team. I think he's a guy, he'll have another, 12, 13, 14-year NBA career, but I think he's a guy that can get you 11 points, 8 rebounds. He'll be a stat stuffer.
Okay. And looking at it now, Marlon, who are your winners in this year's NBA draft?
You got to throw the Celtics in there for what they did. If everything works out, you figure last year Sullinger was probably a top pick and, probably slipped a little bit, but you know what he can do. He's proven. Fab Melo's proven on the defensive end, and Chris Joseph is proven on the offensive end. I like what they did. I like what the Wizards did with Bradley Beal. Obviously, for his reasons, I think he'll be a stud. Like I said, the best player in this draft. A lot of people were down on him. If the light switch turns on for Perry Jones, Oklahoma got the best player in the draft.
Okay. And to you, and obviously that is your steal of the draft.
Definitely. And you figure they're not asking him to do much, but whatever he gives is a bonus. But you're talking about a guy that's 6'11" that can pretty much play four positions.
Right. And real quickly now, Marlon, you're obviously assistant coach St. Peter's. Right now, talk about what you're doing. Talk about how you're preparing for the upcoming NCAA season.
Right now, we're getting ready for the July period. The NCAA kind of cut down on our days. They gave us back the April evaluation period and took some days out of July. So just getting prepared for that. This past year was a rough one for us. We were 5-25 after coming off the championship season the year before. So right now, we're preparing to bring some guys in that can help us get back to where we're used to being and, trying to build this thing for the future. Kind of like what you were saying with the Orlando Magic, breaking it down and building it back up.
Definitely. Hopefully they're listening in Orlando, and they're going to do the same at St. Peter's College this year. Marlon, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. We appreciate your knowledge, and let's do it again.
No problem, Paul. Thanks for having me, man. Not a problem.
Marlon Guild, assistant coach, St. Peter's College. Marlon knows a lot about the game in the NBA, of the game of basketball, I should say, and knows a lot about some of these players in the NBA draft. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/PGAN, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. We want to thank Terrell Brown of the 49ers for joining us, and Marlon Guild, assistant coach, St. Peter's College. And Also, you can follow me and others on Twitter, but I want you to follow me on Twitter at GoForAgain. And again, you can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/begin. So everybody here at GoForIt, hope you have a great day. See you later. Bye.